Okay, count to five.
One, two, three, four, five.
It didn't work. Do it again.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Seven.
Eight, nine, ten.
Okay. We're interviewing Ed Smith, Big Ed Smith, at his home in Dagmar near Plentywood in northeastern Montana. Ed began his service in the state legislature in the election of 1966. Was the Republican candidate for governor in 1972, and served also on the Highway Commission following his terms in both the state House and the state Senate. Ed, what got you interested in politics?
Well, I always had was very vocal on certain issues, and because of that, I guess there was two couples. One was Gib Goodman from Plentywood, and his wife Mary came, and also Kurt and Adeline Ulin. And they did everything possible to convince me to run for the legislature. And I guess part of it was because I was very active in a lot of organizations like the Sheridan County Stockmen Association. I was on the fair board for many, many years. And then also I was a baseball pitcher. So this got to meet a lot of people. And I always was good-natured at the ball games. I did play to win, and also in politics. So all of those things fit together, and they came and...
Did they encourage you to run as a Republican?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because your area here was heavily Democratic and had been traditionally for a long time. It was a long shot to run as a Republican.
Well, a lot of them told me I was running on the wrong ticket, and I said, as far as I'm concerned, there isn't a right or wrong ticket. And I said, as far as I'm concerned, if you believe in the two-party system, I should just have as much right to expect your vote as I would otherwise. But the thing I did first, before I did file, I talked to a lot of key people, and I said, okay, what do you think of me running for the legislature? And if they said, oh, just fine, then I said, I can count on your support. So I did line up a lot of support to run for the legislature, and a very well-known key Democrat served as my secretary treasurer. So
who was that?
Arnie Nielsen from Dagmar, and that was a stronghold for the Democrat Party, and that was in the Dagmar community. But anyway, why
did you run as a Republican?
Because I did talk to the Democrats about it, and they told me that I would have to sign a pledge that I would go by the Democrat platform. And I told them that I certainly would not sign a pledge for anything like that, either to the Democrat or the Republican Party. I said I want to run as an individual to represent the people that elect me.
And philosophically, did you feel like you would be more comfortable as a Republican than a Democrat?
Yes, because they told me that if I did run on a Democrat ticket, being they already had their candidate, who was Mag Zosheim, that they would not support me. So I thought, well, there.
But you did consider running as a Democrat.
Yes, but as a conservative Democrat.
Yeah. Now, what was there anything you were well into manhood, obviously, when you ran for the legislature first time in 1966. Were there anything in your background as a young person growing up that caused you to become interested in politics or helped to formulate your political philosophy?
Well, I guess it all boils back to the 1920s and 30s when the Communist Party had elected candidates for the sheriff, just about the county attorney, county commissioners, all of those offices. And I thought this was awful because of their philosophy. I certainly don't have a communistic philosophy, and I just felt, and a lot of people that I worked with and played ball with got to know me personally, and they know that I was not the kind of person that'd go along just to get along, and that I would do a good job of representing them regardless of what ticket I run on.
And so did you consider yourself, say, in the 1950s as a Republican? Do you remember if you voted for Eisenhower or Adlai Stevenson or anything like that?
Well, I guess the only Democrat president I voted for was Roosevelt. And I guess the other thing that it goes back to, and that is that my father was a conservative Democrat. Well, it ended up that the secretary for the Communist Party in Sheridan County then was elected by the Democrat Central Committee as their county chairman. And my dad, that turned him off. He was a Jefferson Democrat, but after that happened, and so pretty much after that, I just felt that with that kind of leadership, they weren't going to represent the people of Sheridan County, because you don't go clear off the deep end and think that you're going to be able to do anything for the public.
Yeah. So your principles have always been kind of on the conservative side.
Yes, definitely on the conservative side, because I have found out very quickly you can't spend yourself into prosperity. And that does concern me right now about our national offices and the way we have run the state and as a nation into debt. I think that that is wrong. I hope that it comes out all right, but I feel that we've not run the country in the interest of our young people, my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
So the first time you ran for the legislature, you were elected?
No, I ran for the legislature on the Senate side in 1965.
Over in the 64 election.
Yeah, and I lost by 58 votes in that.
Who was your opponent?
Lloyd Michaels.
Lloyd Michaels,
mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And you narrowly defeated by Lloyd Michaels, running mm-hmm. as a Republican in 64. Of course, that was a good year for Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yeah. And he was a well-established and a fine individual.
Yeah.
So, but these people that came and talked to me thought that that would be a good place to start. But the way it turned out, it was for the best, because then I was elected to the House and had more knowledge. And like I said, I found out one thing, and that is don't jump into the race until you obligate some people to vote for you.
That's probably was a real good strategy.
Yeah.
And so, had you had much experience down in Helena before you were elected to the legislature?
I had went down there and testified on a wheat commission bill, and to set up a wheat commission and appoint a board, and I testified at that hearing. And it just so happened that those people being testified at that hearing, the grain growers, then asked me if I'd carry a bill in the 1967 session. I carried the bill, and it was opposed by both Farm Bureau and Farmers Union. And through the efforts of a lot of people, we got the bill passed. As a matter of fact, I had some people told me that you don't introduce legislative first session because you're supposed to learn in the process. And well, I said, I thought the best way to learn the process would be to get in the middle of it. And I said, I'm not sure that I'm going to be here the next time, so I thought I'd give it a shot now.
Might as well.
Yeah.
And so the bill passed and was
signed
into law by the
governor? Yes, we got the bill passed. Yeah, even with the opposition of both Farm Bureau and Farmers Union.
Now, the 1967 session was the first session there was a period of time in the late 60s and early 70s where the sales tax was the big mm-hmm. issue in the legislature.
Yep.
And it surfaced in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And had you taken a position on the sales tax?
The people that I represented, I would say 2 or 3 to 1 were opposed to a sales tax, unless it was written also in the bill that they were going to get a certain amount of property tax relief. And as far as I'm concerned, the property tax is more regressive than a sales tax, because if you don't pay your taxes for 3 years, you can lose your property.
Yeah.
But if you don't buy, you don't have the money to buy things, well, you're not going to pay much sales tax anyway. But I just felt that the people that I asked to vote for me were, I would say, at least 75% opposed to a sales tax, so I felt that that was my obligation. And I know several very good legislators that I served with were defeated because of the sales tax issue.
So, Ed, was that a hunch? Your instinct was that the people here in your area were overwhelmingly against it?
No. Like I told you, I'd been involved in all of those different things and organizations, and also a ball player, because after you have a ball game, a lot of times you end up in a bar and have a beer or two, and it's pretty easy. I found out that, by gosh, you can get a lot of good information from people. I don't care whether it's in church or in a bar. By far a large majority of the people asked me, are you going to vote for a sales tax? And I said, well, what do you think? And And like I said, 75% of the people were opposed to a sales tax. So I told the people that I'm going out there to represent you. I'm not going out there to represent the Republican Party or any other party.
And I think because the sales tax was defeated in a statewide referendum 4 years later by about a 3-to-1 margin, that your your assessment was probably exactly correct.
Well, if you don't listen to, like I mentioned earlier, you'd better remember the people that elect you and what their thoughts were, because and you're not representing yourself there. You're representing the people that elect you and the people that live in your district.
Ed, before we, I want to visit with you about your important involvement in the territorial integrity legislation, which happened in the 71 session. But before we talk about your role as a legislator, let me just ask you briefly. You unseated an incumbent in 1966,
yes,
who had served four terms in the legislature, and who I think was probably would have been, by most odds, would have probably been considered the favorite in the race you ran against him, even though you ran a close race for the state Senate 2 years before. Were there any issues in the 1966 campaign that made it possible for you to win that that victory?
Well, I think...
You mentioned you lined up the important support on the telephone.
Yes, and that was number one, and it was... it was Magnus Awesome. I might just as well mention his name. And he and I are still good friends. At least I like the fellow, I think. But the trouble was, he was a... At home, he was a conservative. But when he went to the legislature, that is in his own business, but when he went to the legislature, he voted very liberally. And that, I think, is what kind of set the people off. And I just pointed this out, that... That's where he and I differed. But it was a very tough race. When they found out that it looked like they were losing, they called people mugwumps and everything else. You have to be on one side of the fence or the other. You can't sit in the middle of the fence. And but it was a very very heated campaign. But
did you appear jointly with Magnus Ossine?
Oh, yes, that? Yes. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. And then they had meetings, and they had people that interviewed give the people that a chance to ask questions of the candidates where you stood on particular issues. And that's another place where I found out they were very much opposed to a sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of took the bite out of their campaign, and that is they run on that they were opposed to a sales tax. One of the other things that... we're talking about territorial integrity. There was a lot of people that knew that what made our area is when we got rural electric to the farms, and we would have never got it if it wasn't that we did it through the cooperative. And I know when they were putting in the high line and the poles, that is the most beautiful sight I ever seen. And that is, that's what made agriculture, and that is we got less electricity to the farms.
So you were elected, and you went over to Helena in the 1967 session. You successfully carried the grain growers legislation, which was important agricultural legislation that the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union both opposed, which is really...
Yeah, I remember Clyde Jarvis and Hank Wilson. That's the only time I ever saw them visit, and that is when they were trying to defeat the bill. Otherwise, they were just at odds.
So you unified the farm movement.
Yes, and the other thing, like I mentioned to a lot of the Republicans, and as you will recall, like I told them, that why not get those issues out of the way? Because they were defeating, the opposition were defeating a lot of Republicans because they didn't support a territorial integrity legislation. And my gosh, why, I don't know. I just... and we'll discuss that a little more when we get into the territorial integrity legislation. But these are the issues that I run on, and that is the first time, and then I continued to run on, and I served three terms in the House, and then I ran for governor in 72, and then I served not elected to that position. Then I served for 14 years on the Senate Finance and Claims, which is a very important committee. And I guess the thing that really surprised me, and that was Francis Bardanov, who was the leadership in the House, and C.R. Thiessen from Lambert, who was in the Senate. They were the two people that come and asked me to serve on the Senate Finance and Claims Committee.
Now, Bardineau, of course, was chairman when the Democrats had the majority of the mm-hmm. House Appropriations Committee.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Senator Thiessen was the chairman of the Finance Committee.
Yes.
Some of the
mm-hmm.
time. Yeah.
So I
and
said,
they both asked you to serve on
yes,
the Finance
Yes, they came committee. To me and said, we want you to serve. And I said, my gosh, this is my first term in the Senate. You're going to get yourself in trouble with some Democrats because of them not being appointed on it. And I said, why are you doing it? And they said, well, we feel that you got your head screwed on right, and we want you to serve on the committee, which right. I did. And I served then for all 14 years,
yeah,
and then I also served on the subcommittee that set the budget for the nine state agencies, like Department of Agriculture, Livestock, Fish and Game, and so forth. So,
yeah. Major responsibility, of course.
Yes, and it, I really enjoyed it because it we did a lot of good things as far on the Finance Committee.
Now, Ed, you served with many people in the legislature, and service in the legislature gives you an opportunity to do that. You meet people from all over the state, and I can think of, for example, in 67, you were a freshman in the House of Representatives, and so was Pat Williams, who later mm-hmm. went on to be a congressman.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have probably gotten to know him somewhat.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And that's a nice thing about it. And the thing that I always practice is and not make partisan politics an issue. Different pieces of legislation you introduce. The one thing that I never did in my 20 years, and that was trade a vote. I had people that would come say, well, if you vote for my bill, I'll vote for yours. And I said, no, I don't operate that way. I'll explain my bill to you, explain your bill to me. And I said, then we'll make a decision on how we're going to vote. So and that worked very well.
Yeah, that's yeah,
because my dad taught me when I was a young boy, and that is your word's your bond. If your word isn't any good, your name isn't either. And I don't think anybody can say that I went back on my word.
That's very
careful.
Any thoughts or impressions on any legislators that you served with that stand out in your mind particularly?
Yes, I mean, there are so many of them that did, but Jim Lucas was the Speaker of the House. He was a good legislator. The only thing that defeated him, and I tried to convince him not to to introduce the sales tax, I'm sure Jim Lucas would have been the governor, because he's a very articulate, very sharp individual. And there were a lot of different people I know that you got acquainted with. It'd be hard to start naming very many, but by serving on the various committees. And the other thing that when I served in the Senate, I served on the Senate Education Committee, and that was a real experience, of how to work out the differences for properly funding. And then one of the big issues was homeschool, religious schools, and public schools. And it's turned out that we found out that there's a place for both. So I wasn't wrong when I made my point as far as letting these people, if they wanted to educate their own children. I had people come to that committee and testify that they had to take their children out of the public school and put them in a private school, and they said that you or a religious school, and you couldn't believe the improvement. So there's a place for all mm-hmm. of those. And all we want to do is make sure that we educate our children.
Okay.
I didn't have that opportunity when I grew up, but I certainly seen to it that our four sons have certainly get their college educations.
Ed, you, 69 session, the 67 session, you mentioned that we talked about the sales tax surface then, the green growers legislation that you piloted through the legislative process. Anything occur to you that may have happened in the 69 session?
Well, I did introduce a territorial big in the bill in the 69 session, but the rural electrics weren't really prepared at that particular time. But by going through the process, both the rural electrics and myself and several other people, learned the process and how to approach it. The legislation they asked me to introduce, I think, went too far. As a matter of fact, they wanted to replace REAs with Montana Power, and I told them there has to be a middle ground, and that's what we worked on.
Now, Ed, just for the benefit of people who will listen to our interview sometime in the future, maybe you'd better explain what territorial integrity means and is. What was in dispute? What was the issue, and what were you trying to solve?
Well, what we tried to solve, and that is the Montana Power or the investor-owned utilities pretty much had a monopoly. And if the Rural Electric's built in a line, if they decided that there was going to be good revenue from it, they could force the Rural Electric to take out their line, and they could build line in and provide the electricity. And actually, what the legislation did, and that is, they allowed the Rural Electrics, if they were closer to a person that wanted electricity, could do it at a less cost than the investor-owned utilities. The REA could build in the line. And I think that's one of the big things. And I do have some of the things that they...
So you've got a situation where it would cost the investor-owned utility company more money to put in the line than it would the Rural Electric Co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was the case, then the co-op would build the line instead of the investor-owned utility company.
Yes. But
it would work the other way as well?
Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure, whoever's the closest. And okay. If they want to put the power in, they could do it. And I think that the big thing was, and that is, like I said, I talked to Everett Shuey, who was a lobbyist, and I talked to Bob Corrett afterwards, and, you know, he said, Ed, we really fought you, but it turned out to be the best thing in the world, because he said, down the road, we're going to have plenty of environmental problems, we're going to have problems of providing adequate electricity to a lot of different people, and he said, actually, the legislation was good. But what the bill really said, and that is whoever could build the power in the cheapest, which saves the consumer dollars, and because somebody has to pay for the added cost. And I just felt that in all our debate, we spent at least 100 hours on writing the bill so that it was what I felt reasonable and something that I could support and the public could support. And as you can see, the key vote was 53 in favor of the amendment that I put on the bill. But I want to go back and the Montana Power and the MDU and the Pacific Power and Light, they had Boots Osborne, Representative Osborne from Lewistown, sponsor a bill. And the things that were in it, I didn't think was fair. And it still left Montana Power, the investor-owned utilities, have a monopoly. And I don't think when it comes to supplying the public with whether it be a water project or whether it be an electric project or a road or what it is, it should be done at the least cost. It all goes back to the people that use it. But we, with the amendment that I put in, did pass the House 53-46 with 4 recorded as not voting and 1 absent. And in the group there were 53 legislators, 35 were Democrat and 18 were Republican. So we did get support from both sides of the aisle. But the key issue was that as I mentioned earlier, that whoever could provide that service, in our particular case, you know as well as I do, the investor, the people that bought stock in a big corporation would not allow them to go out and build power lines to all the farmers in the rural area, because I think that in some cases now they had to build in the power. I was the only customer at that particular time. They had to build in three more miles of line. So this was one of the arguments, and I guess why some of the people opposed it, they felt that was probably a little bit too liberal, because like one fellow said, you know, he said you did have communism up here. And that, are you sure this isn't on the fringe of communism, cooperative? But I think since then, Bob, it's been proven that cooperatives by the farmer, it was a good, and not only the farmer, but even people in small communities by a cooperative, they've done wonders.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we own it. I mean, we go there and we vote the board of directors in, and we carry a lot of the responsibility in providing that power, and I don't know what we'd do without it. But I got to tell you one thing: if this was that, you see, they hired Everett Shuey as their lobbyist, who was, when I was president of the Montana Wool Growers Association. I was president of Montana Wool Growers Association, and he was our executive secretary. Well, they hired him, and I'm sure
Montana
part of it.
The power company hired him.
Yes, the power company, Montana Power, hired him to be their lobbyist, and actually, the way it all turned out, and you did have some experience, and I'd just like to have you mention what happened there, but it just turned out that the way it all turned out happened. Why? It was the best thing in the world because it was ever Shuey and I that finally negotiated the deal.
But it was a hot issue. I remember.
My
first session in the legislature was 71 when you had that amendment.
Yeah.
And just in background, you'd introduced this bill in 69. It had been a festering problem for a long mm-hmm. time. In fact,
five sessions.
Yeah. And I was virtually unfamiliar with it because it hadn't been an issue up in the northwestern part of the state like it had been in other parts mm-hmm. of the state. And so I came to the legislature with almost no knowledge of this issue, but it had been an explosive issue in other parts of the state, including in your own, where I guess in some cases there were even competing power lines on opposite sides of the same county road.
And on the same side of the street.
Yeah.
On different sides of the street.
Bizarre situation, and there needed to be a solution of some kind to it. But the laws as they were written tended to favor the investor-owned utility companies.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have to give up quite a bit if there was a change in the law. So they fought it fiercely. And in 1969, when you introduced your bill, obviously you had telegraphed a signal at that time that you were serious about it and you'd probably reintroduce the bill again in the next legislative session. So at that point, as I remember the story, the background was some of the Montana Power Company people and perhaps some other investor-owned utility people got together, I think, with the Sun River Electric Co-op.
That could
maybe
be,
it was the Fergus Electric Co-op. Some co-op,
Fergus,
mm-hmm. okay, mm-hmm. one or two, but maybe just one co-op, and they worked out an agreement, which was the bill that Representative Osbernson ended up introducing. So when you got to the legislature, you of course introduced a bill on the same subject in 1969. You got over there and looked at the bill that Osbernson had, and you thought, gosh, this is really inadequate. This mm-hmm. isn't a fair compromise. This isn't at all what needs to be done to put this problem behind us. So you decided to amend Osbernson's bill to make it into a more realistic compromise from your point of view to legislate a real solution to the problem. And then the story you've mentioned that you and I have visited about before was that was my first session, 1971, and I was going to be one of the legislators that read all the bills. And so my desk just looked like a big white haystack. And I was coming in early in the morning, and I'd get out the code books because the bills always referred back to sections of the law, and it was so bewildering and so discouraging and so overwhelming, and I wasn't making very important progress, and of course I learned better as the years went on that you generally don't need copies of the bills until they've passed a committee, and then because you may never see them if they're introduced in a committee and they're killed in the committee, you never see them, so there's no point in reading a bunch of bills that will never see the light of day, but I didn't realize that at the time. So I'd come into the House chamber, I suppose 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was sitting trying to read through this haystack of bills on my desk, and the only other person in the House chamber that morning was you. And you were seated working at your desk, and this fellow who I didn't recognize came in and sat down next to you, and you and he acknowledged each other, and then he sat next to you for what seemed like a very long period of time. It was probably a minute. But it was obviously an uncomfortable situation between the two of you. And then he broke the silence by saying, "Are you going to amend that bill of Osbernson's on second reading today?" And you said something to the effect, "Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm working on the amendment right now, or planning to working on my mm-hmm. remarks right now." And he said, "Don't do it, Ed. I'm warning you. We'll kill the amendment, and we'll make trouble for you if you do that. Now, this is a big deal to us, and I'm warning you, don't attempt to amend that bill." And you said, "Well, look, you can warn me as much as you want to, but I'm going to give her a try, and if I succeed, fine, and if I don't, I guess she'll win, but you can count on me doing the amendment today if I can get it on the bill." And he said, "Well, you can't say you haven't been warned, because this is important to us, and we're going to fight this really hard, and I'm warning you, Ed, you're going to be sorry if you do this." And then he got up and walked out, and I was shocked. Mm-hmm. So I went up to you and I said, "Who in the heck was that?" And you said, "Oh, he's an old friend of mine. He used to be work for us when I was in the Wool Growers Association." I said, "Well, what's his name?" He said, "Well, his name's Everett Shuey." And he said, "Now he's working for the Montana Power Company." And I said, well, where does he, how can he threaten you like that? And you said, well, you know, if he was really threatening me or not, he's new at this job and he wants to succeed and this is a big deal to him and that sort of thing. And I said, well, I think it was pretty disgusting when I just heard him say to you, you know, warning you and you'll be sorry and that sort of thing. And I said, I don't know what the heck your bill is or what the amendment is or anything about it, but you can sure count on my vote. And so anyway, then later that afternoon, on Saturday afternoon, you went ahead and proposed your amendment, and I was one of the people who supported you, and the vote was fairly close, as you've indicated. Mm-hmm. And one of the members of my legislative delegation, the fellow who was presiding at the time, I think probably must have voted against your amendment, because I think he left the board open. We vote electronically. Mm-hmm. And so generally what happens is the person who's presiding over the what's called the Committee of the Whole, the debate stage of the legislative process, says something like, the question now arises on the motion of Senator Smith to amend Senate Bill number, House Bill number 26, or whatever the number.
Number five.
As many as in favor will vote aye, those opposed no. Has any member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? And then sometimes there's a long pause there to give people a lot of time to change their votes or to get people time to get in from the bathroom or from the cloakroom or something to get to their desk to vote. And I think there was an unusual amount of time because the person presiding was looking at the electronic voting board, and the side he wanted to win was short on votes. And during that period of time, which was probably just a few seconds, one of the members from my legislative delegation came over and said, Bob, change your vote. You've got to change your vote, you know. And I said, I'm not going to change my vote. And then it was just seconds after that he said, every member voted, does any member wish to change his or her vote? The secretary will record the vote, and turned off the voting machine, and that's when your amendment prevailed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then I think what happened then was the legislature, of course, didn't meet on Sunday, but on Monday we had what was called the third reading vote, or the final vote on the bill, and then miraculously it was a green board. In other words, it was unanimous. Every single person, the 46 who had voted against your bill, or your amendment, on Saturday, all voted for the bill as amended on Monday, and it passed over to the state Senate, where, as I understand it, it also passed by a maybe unanimous margin, or close to it, and was signed into law by the governor. So it was a big victory.
But
and since then, I don't think there's been. I think that same law is completely intact, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. There's been a few changes, and the thing that I appreciate, and that is that the rural electrics, they would have liked to have gotten more, but they did not make an attempt to, as long as I was in the legislature, but they have made a few changes since, but they're minor changes. The original intent still is there.
It still is there, yeah. And so really what you accomplished was to end that war that had been festering for 10 or more years.
But there's more to it than that, Bob. Now, on Sunday afternoon, I felt that they were going to make a real, over the weekend, they were going to make a real run at defeating
changing some of the votes over on Sunday,
yeah,
talking
and,
to some
and,
of the guys
and
that
kill,
had voted for.
And kill the amendment.
Yeah.
But on Sunday afternoon, I got very concerned, so I went and met in the motel or room of Rod Hansen, who was lobbying on the bill, and Willis McCune from Malta, who was the attorney for LaRule Electric. And I explained to them what I was afraid was going to happen, and I asked them, what do you think of me doing some things? And I explained to them, first of all, and I did it because I wanted witnesses. I called Jim Lucas, who was Speaker of the House, and I said, how are you going to vote on the bill? And he said, I haven't made up my mind yet. And I said, I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to expose this whole thing, because I said, Jim, I had a fellow come and meet with me and make a very substantial offer if I would not go through with the amendment. As a matter of fact, I also, I don't know whether it was a setup, but I was in the Colonial Bar and Lounge one evening. They have a dance floor there, and a very charming young lady come up and wanted to know if I'd dance with her, and I said, well, I want to warn you now that I'm not the best dancer in the world. Well, she said, that's fine. So we got on the dance floor, and to start up a conversation with her, I said to her, do you work here in Helena? Are you secretary for one of the legislative committees or so forth? And she said, no, I'm a prostitute. She said, we can go to your place or my place. And it kind of floored me at first, and I thought to myself, so I said to her, well, I've only been away from home for 5 days, and I said, I don't think I need your services. And she said to me, go to hell, you SOB, and she quit me on the dance floor. So I don't know whether it was set up or not, but I also told them that this person met me one evening in the Jurgensen's and...
Not the prostitute, but another person.
No, this was another person. Okay. And he said, this bill is going to be cost us a lot of money. And he said, you don't have to introduce it.
And you're talking about your amendment.
Yes, yeah. my amendment, yeah. Yeah, because the amendment is what we felt made the bill.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, he said, well, it cost us probably $200,000 to $250,000. You don't have to introduce the bill, you know. And I said, gosh, I don't operate that way. And, well, he said, every man has his price. What's yours, if that isn't enough? And I said, sir, you have found a person that don't have a price. Because I said, how could I go home and look at my constituents and look at my family and know that if I sold out because of some dollars? So I told Jim
and
Lucas.
You didn't know who that was?
No, he didn't. He may have introduced himself, but that wouldn't make any difference. He wouldn't give me his right name anyway.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, I told him that I don't have a price. And I told, then the next day, I told Jim Lucas that of all the things that they had done to try to, and they also offered me property and things like this. So I told him that I was going to expose all that. Well, then he gave me the telephone number of Montana Power to get in touch with. So I called the number that he gave me, and Everett Chewy then called me back. I gave him a number. It was the number of the motel, and I said, well, call me back and let me know. But he said, if you don't talk to anybody between now and 6 o'clock tonight, we'll give you our where we stand on the issue, whether we'll support it or not support it. So about 6 o'clock, well, I said, at least I hope I can talk to my wife. But anyway, they called me back at 6 o'clock and said that if you will oppose any amendments, he said that if you oppose any amendments to the bill, we'll give you a green board on Monday. So I said, well, so I said to Rod Hansen and to Willis McCune, who was in the motel room, what do you think of that? And they said, fine. But he said, gosh, I never knew that you had that much on them. And they didn't want this because I had a reputation of having credibility. And they knew, and Everett Shuey knew that that wouldn't work, even with the people that he worked with all those years. And it was Everett Shuey that met with me at 6 o'clock that evening in Jurgensen's, and we had dinner together. And he said, Ed, I'm glad this is all over. He said, I hope we're still friends. And to this day, we've been good friends. And he said that if you will oppose the amendments, which I did.
There were further amendments to change.
Oh, sure. There was some of the people that wanted the whole bundle.
Now, this would have happened over in the Senate, right? They would have tried to amend it further in the Senate?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, C.R. Thiessen was on the state board, said that, well, after we get some amendments on it, he said it'll be a good bill. And I said, C.R. Thiessen, if you introduce another amendment to it, I'm going to vote to kill the bill, because the Rural Electrics agreed that if they got this, that was good enough.
Well, you know, Ed, I had a similar visit with Gordon McCumber on this same issue, and he was vitally interested in it, as you were.
Well, he carried it in the Senate.
And he told me he remembered a meeting of some kind that took place that included both you and him. Mm-hmm. I don't know who else was there, but I think it was after the bill had passed over to the Senate from the House, as amended by you, and that you'd laid down the law in the meeting and said, look, the bill has to be as it is. It can't be changed. It can't be amended one way or another. It's a take it or leave it deal, and it's got to go the way it is.
Yep.
And so...
Well, we got all of the things that they wanted. I mean, and if it wasn't, why does it work so well?
Yeah, I think
that's...
And
like I was mentioning earlier, after that, now, Everett Shuey called me up one day, and he said, I would like to go grouse hunting up in your area, but he said, I got a fellow that I want to bring along. And I said, well, who's that? And he said, Bob Corrett. And I said...
And of course, Bob Corrett had been
the lobbyist for
the Montana Power Company. He was basically Shuey's boss.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And then, I said, well, that's sure fine. But he said it may hurt you politically if the people find out that I and who was a lobbyist for Montana Power and Bob Corrett come up and went hunting. As a matter of fact, they stayed a couple nights here at our place. And I'll never forget the evening. My wife had a roast turkey and had a big meal for him. And as lobbyists do, they're good to brag. And he was telling my wife such a wonderful dinner that she prepared. And I looked at Bob and I said, you know, those RIA lights don't look too bad either, do they? But it ended up, Everett Shue and I were the best of friends, because I found out one thing in politics. You can disagree, but you don't have to be disagreeable. And that's the way it worked. And so many people in the wool growers thought, well, now Everett Shue and I will never be friends. It never affected our friendship whatsoever. I realized he had a job to do. I had a job to do. And let the chip fall where they may. It just so happened that I think that we come with something reasonable, and that's the way it went.
And so that of course, was a huge victory for you, and it helped to...
Well, for the people, the rural electric users.
You know. For the rural electric users across the state, and their publication, you have a copy of it there before you here as we're having our visit, features you on the front page. And so that was in the households of many rural Montanans all across Montana, and made you a pretty well-known figure in the legislature.
Oh, yes, yeah. They knew that I was going to stand up and represent the people that elected me.
And so then also in that same session, in the 1971 session, there was a protracted battle that turned into an impasse over a proposed state sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that?
Well, there was lots of pressure put on to me by...
You first voted on the sales tax in 67 and voted against it. Then it surfaced again importantly in 71.
Yeah. And again, like I mentioned earlier in our comments, and that is that when I found out that the majority of the people were opposed to it, I know a lot of good legislators got beat the next election because of the sales tax. And one was Jim Lucas. Jim Lucas, I tried my best to talk to Jim Lucas and tell him, well, it's going to destroy you politically. And if Lucas hadn't came out in favor and carried the sales tax bill, I'm sure Jim Lucas had been governor. And he was a very, very astute individual.
Well, I think he realizes, too, that his association with the sales tax was probably fatal to him politically for any ambitions he may ever have.
Well, as a matter of fact, Jim Lucas told me one time, I sure wish I'd listened to you.
Is that
you
right?
Know? Let's face it, being on the board of directors of the Montana Wool Growers Association, I served on the board of directors of Montana Grain Growers Association, and a lot of other associations. Well, you get a feeling of how the people feel on different issues.
Yeah.
And you don't do anything but carry out the wishes of the people. And when it gets back to electricity, right now we just got a Congress to pass an energy bill, and look at how long this took. And we've got to find ways to provide a cheaper fuel, because now, like on our farm and ranch operation, matter of fact, I just had a fellow deliver propane, because the price is going through $1.10 a gallon for propane. And he said that the diesel fuel was $2. And at the price of wheat, we have, to give you another example, we have two diesel pumps pumping irrigation, and we have one electric. And at the time I put in the diesel pumps, well, it cost too much to get the line built in. And then now, it had been cheaper if I'd have built a line in, because the diesel fuel is $2 a gallon, and I filled it up 4 years ago for 51 cents a gallon.
Wow.
So you can see how our cost has escalated.
Yeah.
And the grain prices doesn't increase that much to make up the difference. And can you imagine if we hadn't been provided electricity, I think we'd have still been, it would have been a big open. Look at the products that the consumers spent their money on, like hot water heaters, dryers, washers. It's just marvelous. And after I seen what electricity did in our operation, I couldn't do anything but put up my best fight. And I know I was so busy on the bill But it was a big joke around Helena Capital, and that was that who does Smith think he is taking on Montana Power? Well, it just happened that they stubbed their toe, and because of that, we got the legislation passed.
And that same session, as we've discussed, that was a big story in the newspaper statewide, and a significant piece of legislation that passed that you were principally involved with. Then in that same session, the sales tax drug on, mm-hmm. as I recall, that under the 1889 Constitution, which was still in effect then, the mm-hmm. legislature met for 60 calendar days.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the 60 days, the legislature hadn't balanced the budget because it didn't have the money to do it, hadn't made cuts sufficient to balance the budget, and the Democrats, who had the majority in the Senate, favored an increase in the income tax to raise the money to balance the budget and comply with the Constitution. The Republicans felt that the sales tax was still something we needed, so they preferred, if we were going to have new money, that we have it generated from a sales tax, mm-hmm. and the Republicans had the majority in the House. So there was a stalemate that resulted in that legislative session lasting something like 107 days and not concluding until June sometime or other. And you continued your opposition to the sales mm-hmm. tax. And your analysis is, and I think it would be shared by Jim Lucas, that the way the sales tax played out, which was ultimately that the Republicans wouldn't give and neither would the Democrats, and so the proposal to raise the income tax by 35%, which was the Democrats' proposal, mm-hmm. or have a 2% sales tax, that those measures would go on the ballot side by side and the people would decide what to do. And by a nearly 3-1 majority, the people voted to raise the income tax 35% mm-hmm. instead of to impose a 2% sales tax. And the referendum was so overwhelming that it discouraged Jim Lucas from running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
There was another big issue in that legislative session, which was a huge one, I think, in your life, and that was executive reorganization that was yep. proposed by Governor Anderson. What do you remember about that?
Well, I violently opposed it, vigorously opposed it, for the simple reason I like grassroots boards, and that eliminated, give the governor the power to appoint the director of each of the state agencies. And I think it's turned out to be a horrible mistake.
Now, Ed, what had the old system been?
The old system was that you had boards, grassroots boards that served on and made the decisions for that agency. And after right now I don't think that there's any boards that are really active. I think it's strictly up to the director.
The governor
appoints the director, and then the director makes a decision.
The governor appointed these grassroots citizens boards
before,
and there were a lot of them.
Oh yes,
quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. And so the governor still appoints boards, mm-hmm. but there aren't near as many. But your concern was that the many of the boards were eliminated. Is that right?
They were what?
They were eliminated or done away with.
Oh yes, they yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh
dozens
sure.
Dozens of them, maybe scores of them, were completely mm-hmm. done away with, and they were some of the remaining ones were consolidated, and then they were placed in one of 20 departments.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the governor appointed the director of each department.
Mm-hmm.
So your concern was that this had really lost a lot of its grassroots. Yep. Is that right?
Oh yes, it really did, and.
Put the governor in a more correct or a more direct top-down.
Give him dictatorial authority, because if he appoints just like the director of in the agency of reappraisal of property, well, that was one of the things that no other state in the nation allows the state to appraise your property, because every county is different. Every county has different income. They have different costs than others. And I will admit, I think that the Board of Equalization was doing a poor job, but it sure didn't help by just having a point. The only agency that survived, and that was the Department of Livestock. The appointed commission members appoint the director, and that's the way it should have been. But they tried different times after that to change that, but livestock and agriculture, people, and a lot of people seen that it didn't work like they were promised it would, so at least we have kept the Department of Livestock separate.
But this idea was sold, I think, by Governor Anderson
yes.
under the slogan, 20 is plenty.
Yeah, that's the whole.
And it was the idea was efficiency. We need to mm-hmm. streamline our state government, get it made it more efficient. We need to eliminate a lot of these unnecessary boards and bureaus and things that really don't belong, and are costly and cumbersome and so forth. That was
20's plenty.
20's plenty was the argument. And so it prevailed in the legislature. You argued against it.
Oh, yes.
But it prevailed in the legislature, and it was signed into law by Governor Anderson.
Yep.
Now, did that have anything to do with motivating you to run for governor against Anderson? Because we didn't know Anderson wasn't going to run.
Yeah.
It turned out he didn't run. But
well,
that was obviously something you had a strong feeling about in opposition to him.
Executive Reorganization and the Procedures Act, Administrative Procedures Act, which was used to implement it. I would say that possibly the reason that so many people encouraged me to run for governor was because of my position on the wheat commission, to set up a wheat commission that paid a percent, and then they represented the grower, and they've done an excellent job. And the other was to take on Montana Power and won. I think that was the reason, and I know Bowler, that was the editor of the Billings Gazette, wrote quite an article, and he said, at least one, Ed Smith has proved that he isn't controlled by a big corporation. And I think that was probably the reason that so many people asked me to run. And I thought, well, if there's that many people asked me to run, why, I'll give it a whirl.
Ed, at the beginning of the 71 session, had the thought occurred to you to run for governor?
No, not really. No, so, not at all.
That kind of played out over that 71 session.
Yes, it was after that Yes, and that's the reason that so many encouraged me to go ahead and do it. And I had a lot of support. I guess one of the things that did disturb me, and that is that a lot of Republicans wouldn't support me because they didn't vote for sales tax. Well, if it came out for sales tax, I could just as well after that. You see, there's a lot of things. And the Republican Party didn't support me is because I wasn't the kind of person that would fall in line.
Because most Republicans supported the sales tax, most Republicans didn't vote for the territorial integrity bill, and so there was the feeling that you were a little bit too much of a maverick.
Yeah, I guess so, and they figured maybe I was some kind of a liberal, which, as you know, I'm certainly not a liberal, I'll tell you that, because our farm and our ranch operation, I think, proves that.
So, but gosh, just think about it. Now, 5 or 6 years before, you were a farmer rancher up here in the Plainwood area, and you served in the legislature 3 whirlwind terms, and people, I think, for a long time had assumed that Jim Lucas would someday be governor.
And he could have been.
And he could have been, probably. And he,
and I'd supported him.
And I think he had been planning for several years to run. And then his situation just collapsed. Did you think, though, that you may end up having to oppose Lucas in the primary?
No, never would. No.
Did you run?
I ran.
That he might still run, or did you know that he wasn't going to run?
I knew he wasn't going to run, yeah. And the only other person that was running in that particular time was Frank Dunkel, who was passed.
Tell about Frank Dunkel.
Well, Frank Dunkel was the director of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and there was a lot of things went on.
Frank Dunkel started out as being viewed as one of the early environmentalists, I think. Would you say that?
Oh, partially, yes. And the other thing,
he'd been director of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks in Anderson's administration.
Yes,
in the Democrat administration.
And before.
Okay. Or maybe he had been kept over from Babcock.
Yeah. And then the other thing was, I in those 20 years that I served in the legislature, I served 18 years on the legislative finance committee that set the budget and reviewed the budget for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. So I had a pretty good idea of how it was run, and there was a lot of things that went on there that certainly I didn't think that what he had made a fit governor. But again, that's
were there issues that surfaced in that primary?
Not too many.
Campaign?
No, not too many.
And how did you raise the money? What a daunting task to raise the money for a common guy that's a farmer, you know.
Well, I had so many people that encouraged me to run, and they were the ones that raised the money. There's a lot of people that made. We had a fondue at the Blue Moon one night, and I forget how many thousand dollars.
Where was the Blue Moon?
The Blue Moon here in Plentywood. Yeah. Largest crowd that was ever at the Blue Moon in their lifetime that came out and supported me for governor, and some of them were even from Canada and North Dakota. As a matter of fact, over at Ganor, North Dakota here, they had a jar for campaign funds for Ed Smith. So I guess But no, the people really came out and supported me, and I appreciated that. But I was disappointed that I didn't win, because then they tried to make an investment that didn't come through.
And it was close.
Yes, it was.
It was close. You carried most of the counties in the state.
Yeah.
You carried your own county by what was the percentage you carried in county?
Here was a supposedly a strong Democrat county, and also at one time a Communist Party, but I got 86.3% of the vote in my own county, and I beat Judge in Lewis and Clark County by 1,000 votes.
And that was Tom Judge was your opponent in the general election, and you beat him in his own county.
Yes.
As well as carrying your home county by an overwhelming majority. Mm-hmm. Did you have a strategy in the campaign?
The campaign was being I couldn't get support from the Republican Party, and it was hard to get a committee organized, and I know that didn't work good, because the news media came out and said that Smith is changing chairmen of his campaign committee like a lady does when she changes shoes. So
have more than one chairman of your campaign committee?
Oh, yes, yeah. Salt Verada started out, and then we ended up with, and as a matter of fact, the Democrat said we aren't going to give you any support unless you hire this California group, which was another thing that really wasn't the right thing to do, because you should be able to get...
But you had, your first campaign chairman was Sox Braddock,
yeah.
Who was a lobbyist for the retail department store, I think, here in the state.
Yeah.
And then he was replaced by who?
Oh, I forget the name now. Well, it ended up in a California firm.
So Sox was actually running your campaign.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then who suggested to you that you get a...
The Republican Party said that we won't support your candidacy unless you hire this California.
You got a professional outfit.
Yep, professional. And I guess they figured that we weren't professional enough.
And they recommended a particular company that turned out to be from California.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel that maybe that might have been a mistake?
Oh, yes. It definitely was a mistake, because with as many people as we got in the state of Montana, we sure should have been able to find a chairman that would have...
What they did was produce your television and radio spots. And
And let's face it, Judge was very articulate on when it come to spots.
Judge owned an advertising
agency. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And this country boy didn't have that kind of... But again, I think it's even gotten worse as far as whoever can get on television. If I was as articulate as Governor Mark Roscoe, there wouldn't have been any problem winning the election.
Now, did you have a slogan or anything? Did you focus on a particular issue?
A lot of different issues. Yeah. And still a people's candidate. And I guess some of them thought that sounded a little bit liberal to a people's candidate, because I guess that's what some of the more liberal people support, and that is people. But I guess every person in the state of Montana, as far as I'm concerned, is people. And if you want to be a candidate, you want to be the candidate for the majority of the people that live in the state of Montana, which I think I would have done and could have done. And the other thing we lost in government's common sense. There's so many, and our bureaucracy is supposed to have been reduced by executive reorganization. We have more people involved in state government than we've ever had, as far as the bureaucracy is concerned. And I talked to different people. The bureaucracies are now harassing people. They're not representing people, they're harassing them. I have a son that's a county planner in Plentywood, and he told me that now the county's going to open up a gravel pit, and if we don't have gravel pits, we don't have can't gravel our roads or pave roads. But he said he, in a certain radius around the gravel pit, he has to write letters to every person in that resides in that area, and get their permission or get their ideas on whether it's going to be a detriment to it or what. But if we keep going the way we're going, we'll have so many regulations. I know that Hewlett-Packard, when I was on the Finance Committee, and then I served for several years with Francis Barbineau on the Legislative Finance Committee, which is a watchdog.
That's the interim committee. Legislative finances, or the state finances between legislative sessions.
Yes, we're the watchdog committee, and I served on that for many years. Francis Barbineau and I were the ones that organized it. So... But the thing about it is, if you just turn it over to these state agencies and they had their director, well, they just run away with the thing. So, and then the other thing, we always came up with so many supplementals. And Franz Bartnov and I introduced legislation that disallowed supplementals. But I think it helped a lot.
Explain what are supplementals?
Supplemental is where they overspend their budget. That was.
So you come back in the next session of the legislature and an agency of government has spent a little more than was appropriate.
And I know the next session before we put in, they had exceeded their budgets by $16 million.
Agencies. So then a bill would be passed which would contain supplementals.
Yeah, so that
to basically.
It would stop their supplementals.
And so you stopped the supplementals.
Yes, we did. Yeah. And that's why I say, by working together, whether you be a Democrat or Republican, it's the only way that you can really run the state decent. And I hate to see partisan politics when it comes to that. Sure, you have to have the two political parties, but at least there are balances that you'd better take a look at.
Do you feel there's a little more partisan politics now, perhaps, than there was a few years ago, or there's always been partisan politics?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it should be, because you have a two-party system.
Sure, yeah.
And I would say, I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure where Schweitzer, how it all come out, because he's got a lot of publicity, and I guess the one piece of publicity he got was to come home and say that he had to, I don't know what, all he had to take a bath in to get away from the stench of the lobbyist. Well,
back in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, when he went to Washington, D.C., and I think that was a terrible statement to make, for the simple reason, we need lobbyists. We need lobbyists. It don't mean that you have to agree with all the lobbyists. Okay. As you know, you're supposed to make your own. And we have lobbyists that are representing agriculture, the rural electrics, industry, all of those things. And all you need to do, and I only had one person in my 20 years lie to me, and that person, when I reported it, he was the next day he was not a lobbyist anymore. And so they can't lie to you, for the simple reason you get the information from both sides, and once you do, it's your job then to make your decision on which way you're going to vote.
Now, Ed, you served with several governors during your career in politics, and maybe just ask you to comment briefly on Governor Anderson, Governor Judge, Governor Schwinden, Governor Stevens. You served also in the legislature extensively with Governor Stevens. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on Governor Anderson?
Well, I would like to start with Tim Babcock.
Good, fine. Oh, that's right. Tim Babcock was governor when you came there.
Yes, when I came in. And as a matter of fact, to even give Lou Perry from Alda and I a plaque. But I'll never forget.
Representing Lou Perry was a Republican from Malta.
Yeah. And I'll never forget, I got a message after we got Weed Commission bill passed in 1967, and he wanted me to come down and meet with him, and I thought, sure as the world, he's going to veto it.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah. And so I went down there and said to him, well, what's up? Well, he said, you big devil, you wanted that bill so bad. He said, now that you've got it passed, you pick the committee members and see that it works. So I said, I'd be happy to. Tim Babcock asked me to pick the commission members.
Which is what the governor would ordinarily do, right?
Which he would do automatically himself.
Sure, yeah,
but no, sir. And I really appreciated Tim Babcock because of that. So I picked the five members on the Wheat Commission, and it just worked out excellent. He told me afterwards, Garsh, he said, I'm sure glad that I had you pick them, because you know these people that we could work with.
Yeah.
And they did. They've done an excellent job.
So it was important for him as the chief executive in the state for the commission to succeed, and it was important to you that it succeeded.
And the industry to succeed, because agriculture is our biggest industry.
Well, that was sounded like a really good decision on his part.
Yeah, and
so you had a pretty good experience with him generally?
Oh, yes. Very good experience. Yeah.
And then Governor Anderson.
Well, I can't say too much about him. At least he did sign the territorial integrity bill, so I got to give him credit there. But I would say that I wouldn't say he was our. All I will say, and that is, he wasn't our best governor.
governor judge?
No, not at the, when I, all the different things I heard, and I didn't ever say anything about it, but well, and just like the, some of the things that's happened since, that he has some problems.
Governor Swindon?
A good governor.
Did you ever have any dealings with him, any conversations with
yes,
him?
Yes, I did one time, and that was on an oil well site in Sheridan County. It was up here by Westby. And he, at that particular time, was the director for the State Lands Department. And I told the committee that I didn't appreciate. I said I contacted Swindon, who was the director of State Lands, and the fellow up there wanted the road rerouted so it didn't go right down through his middle of his grain field. And I talked to Swindon about it, and he said we need those oil wells for their state income. And he said, as far as I'm concerned, the oil company can build the roads wherever they please. Well, when I brought that out at the committee, when we come out of the committee, he shook his finger in my face and said, "You shouldn't have said those things." And I said, "Mr. Swindon, don't you ever shake your finger in my face again, or you're going to lose it." But that's the only encounter
I had. While he was governor?
Yeah, no, he was director.
Director's Department of State Lands. Yeah.
Yep, yep.
So this would have been when, and that was in the, probably the first judge administration?
Yes, it was in the judge administration.
Because he was lieutenant governor in the second judge administration.
Yeah. But that's only, outside of that, I had a very good relationship with Schwinden.
Because you served in the state senate while he was governor.
Yeah, and when they had the farewell party for George McCallum and I on our retirement, as a matter of fact, Governor Swindon was invited to come and make some remarks.
Mm-hmm. I remember that too.
Yeah. So and Stevens did a good job. As a matter of fact, I was the assistant to Majority Four Leader, as you remember, with Governor Stevens.
You were whip when Stevens was Minority Leader, Majority Leader, or something.
Yeah, Majority Leader.
Majority Leader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now you knew Stevens well. Any thoughts, any stories, any...
No, he did a good job. There was one thing, though, that he got a lot of static for, and that is when he got a limousine that was going to escort him around, and some people were very irritated. And Stevens asked me to be a part of his administration, but I told him I had enough of Helena, and that's why I was resigning. But Stevens was the one that came to me and said, "Now that you're retired from the legislature, I want you to serve on a commission." And I said, "Which one would you suggest?" And he said, "Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and the Department of Transportation." Well, I knew that I could do a lot more for the state of Montana by being a commission member for the Highway Transportation Department. And it did turn out just great. I served 8 years on that commission. And we got a lot of work done. We got the department kind of straightened out a little bit, and like I say, we seen to it that the dollars were spent, that the taxpayers or the highway users paid in, and the GVW fees, it was used to a good cause, and we got a lot of roads built.
And so you were in the Senate from when until when?
I was in from 1975 to 87, 89. I retired in 87, but my term run to 89.
Okay, yeah, so you basically...
I was out to 2 years from 72 and 73, so I was back...
So 74, you were elected to the Senate in 74, mm-hmm. Stayed there until 88.
89.
Yeah, the election of 88.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you didn't come back, you didn't serve in the Senate.
No, to 89 election. I was out, 88 session. See, I served, my term expired at the end of 1988.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you started the service on the Highway Commission right after that?
Yeah, and I served 8 years on that.
And how long are the terms on the Highway Commission?
4 years.
4 years, so you served...
Yeah, Stevens appointed me the first time and Roscoe the second time.
Okay, so you served two full terms, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever meet Mike Mansfield?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, in Washington, D.C., I also met Metcalf. I also had the opportunity on a couple of occasions to sit down and visit, several of us did, at Helena with Governor Reagan.
Ronald Reagan?
Yeah.
Did you support Ronald Reagan against Gerald Ford in 76?
Oh, yes, yeah. And then the other person that I met, well, George Bush, when he was president at Billings, my wife and I had a picture taken with him. And then also Pat Nixon. When I was campaigning for governor, I campaigned in the Billings area with her. Nice, petite person. And
so you were particularly impressed I guess he was Governor Reagan at the time?
Mm-hmm.
When he was...
Mm-hmm.
And
then I have three sisters and a brother that live in California, and they had very good rapport. Thought he did an excellent job as governor. Yeah.
And you had a visit with Senator Mansfield in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And met Cass?
Mansfield was a real good statesman. I won't even comment on Metcalf.
I see. Okay. How about Congressman Jim Batten?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was on a tour with the Swift and Company to the packing plants and to the different places. And as a matter of fact, we went to Washington, D.C., and I had the opportunity to introduce Jim Batten on the House floor.
Oh, you got down on the House floor of the U.S. House of Representatives?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what did you do there?
They had me introduce my congressman from my state. They did it with, there was about 25 of us that was on the Swift and Company tour.
I see.
Meatpacking company, and we was looking at feedlots and packing houses and even the retail stores like Macy's Retail.
Yeah.
And so when we went there, then each of the people that was on the tour got to introduce their congressman on the House or Senate floor.
Where were you, up in the gallery?
No, we were down on the floor.
Down on the
floor. Like you do in
I see.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah. And let's face it, he served on the Appropriation Committee, and that's a powerful committee you can, once you have the purse strings, just like serving in the Montana Legislature on Finance and Claim, you have a lot more authority in directing the agency because we're the ones that set their budget.
And Congressman Ron Marlaney.
Ron Marlaney did a good job. The only thing is that problem with Ron Marlaney, after he was there for a while, he kind of lost touch with the people, because I know I talked to him a time or two, and he said, I know all about it, and I said, well, you'll know all about it when the next election comes around. So you don't forget the people. You've served there. You don't forget the people that sent you there.
There's the old saying, if you take care of the people, they'll take care of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you don't take care of the people, they'll take care of you.
You bet. And no, I think that Ron Marlaney did a good job. Reberg's doing a good job. Burns is doing a good job. And when they get on these appropriation committees, the same way with Max Baucus. I have never campaigned against Max Baucus, because when I served on the Department of Transportation, Baucus and Burns worked together, and they got a lot of money for the state of Montana. So you sure don't... the people that's doing a good job for you, you don't turn them out. Yeah.
Let me think. Pat Williams defeated Ron Marlaney. When they ran against each other, Pat had been the congressman from the Western District and Ron from the Eastern District, and they were paired together when we lost one of the congressmen, and Pat won the election. Any thoughts on that?
Well,
you knew them both, Pat. You served in the legislature with Pat.
Oh, yes, but the thing about it is, the thing that I've found out, that the resources of the state are in eastern Montana, our basic resources. The population's in the west. And you probably heard me say on the Senate floor that you never knew where eastern Montana was until we found coal and oil. And that's a fact. They never knew where we're at. We weren't, even when I went on the commission, we hadn't been getting our share for roads in eastern Montana, and I seen to it that we did. But the thing about it is, in the same way in North Dakota, their population's in the east and their resource in the west, and they're having the same problem that we are in the state of Montana.
Ed, we've got about 5 minutes left in our interview before the disc expires. And so I just give you an opportunity now, if there's something I've left out that I perhaps should have asked you about, something we'd like to cover, perhaps it would be energy. We haven't talked much about that. Perhaps it would be your experience on the Highway Commission or anything in the legislature, anything you'd like to say. We can conclude with what you'd like to talk about.
Well, I would say that that I appreciate the people allowing me to have the opportunity to represent them in the legislature and then also in the Highway Commission. I made a lot of friends, got a lot of things done. I know that there was a debate on whether I should be reappointed by Governor Marks on the commission again, and there were 17 counties in my commission district, and every county commissioner, Democrat and Republican, every mayor, every city council, all supported me. So I just felt that I should make a run at it and continue to serve them, which I did. And I appreciate Mark Orozco for reappointing me. And like I said earlier, there are so many things you can do for the people if you're willing to do it. I think the thing that I didn't appreciate with some people, and that is they didn't keep their word. You know, when somebody talked to them, and I did. I made sure that, and I never got a letter or a phone call that I didn't return. I have, two sessions ago, I'd contacted different chairmen of my own party, never got a return, and even in the last session, and I don't appreciate that because I didn't care where they came from. Wherever they were in the state, if they called me and wanted to get some information, I gave it to them, and we have all the opportunity in the world. We have secretaries that'll type up. All you have to do is dictate a letter, and they'll type it up, and I think that's where the people are getting disgusted with the politics. People are really teed off with politics, and politicians being there in Washington, D.C. or in Helena. And I think that's why so many people don't even go and vote. And the other thing that I would like to say, and that is I'd urge everybody to vote because that is their opportunity to pick who they want to represent them in government. But outside of that, I think that we've covered very well, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to do so.
Well, Ed, I appreciate your public service for the state of Montana very much.
Well, thank you.